Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number one, side two. Yeah, Han agreed quietly, and Leia winced at the momentary flash of bitterness in his sense. Despite everyone's best efforts to persuade him otherwise, Han still considered it his own personal fault that Thrawn had gotten to the derelict Katana fleet ships, the so-called Dark Force, ahead of the New Republic. I wouldn't have thought he could get them reconditioned this fast, Han added, as he twisted the Falcon's nose away from Filva and back toward deep space. Leia swallowed. The strange tension was still there, like a distant malevolence pressing against the edges of her mind. Maybe he has enough Sperti cylinders to clone some engineers and techs as well as soldiers. That's sure a fun thought, Han said. And through her tension, Leia could sense his sudden change in mood as he tapped the comm switch. Wedge, take a look back at Filva and tell me if I'm seeing things. Over the comm, Leia could hear Wedge's thoughtful intake of air. You mean, like the whole Imperial force breaking off their attack and coming after us? Yeah, that. Looks real enough to me, Wedge said. Could be a good time to get out of here. Yeah, Han said slowly. Maybe. Leia frowned at her husband. There'd been something in his voice. Han? The Filvians would have called for help before they put up their shield, right? Han asked her, forehead furrowed with thought. Right, Leia agreed cautiously. And the nearest New Republic base is Ord Padron, right? Right. Okay. Rogue Squadron, we're changing course to starboard. Stay with me. He keyed his board, and the Falcon started a sharp curve to the right. Watch it, Falcon. This is taking us back toward that TIE fighter group, Wedge warned. We're not going that far, Anne assured him. Here's our vector. He straightened out the ship onto their new course heading and threw a look at the rear display. Good. They're still chasing us. Behind him, the nav computer beeped its notification that the jump coordinates were ready. Wedge, we've got your coordinates, Leia said, reaching for the data transmission key. Hold it, Falcon, Wedge cut her off. We've got company to starboard. Leia looked that direction, her throat tightening as she saw what Wedge meant. The approaching TIE fighters were coming up fast, and already were close enough to eavesdrop on any transmission the Falcon tried to make to its escort. Sending Wedge the jump coordinates now would be an open invitation for the Imperials to have a reception committee waiting at the other end. Perhaps I can be of assistance, Your Highness, 3PO offered brightly. As you know, I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication. I could transmit the coordinates to Commander Antilles in Buddhist or Vaith-Kree trade language, for example.
And then you'd send them the translation? Han put in dryly.
Of course.
The droid broke off. Oh, dear, he said, sounding embarrassed.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it, Han said. Wedge, you were at Zequeen 2 years ago, weren't you?
Yes. A Kraken twist?
Right. On two. One, two.
Outside the canopy, Leia caught a glimpse of the X-Wing swinging into a complicated new escort formation around the Falcon.
What does this buy us? She asked.
Our way out, Han told her, checking the rear display again. Pull the coordinates, add a two to the second number of each one, and then send the whole package to the X-Wings.
I see.
Leia nodded her understanding as she got to work. Altering the second digit wouldn't change the appearance of their exit vector enough for the Imperials to catch on to the trick, but it would be more than enough to put any chase force a couple of light years off target.
Clever!
And that little flight maneuver they did just now was just window dressing?
Right. Makes anyone watching think that's all there is to it. A little something Pash Kraken came up with at that fiasco of Zyquine.
Han glanced at the rear display again. I think we've got enough lead to outrun them, he said. Let's try.
We're not jumping to light speed?
Leia frowned, an old and rather painful memory floating up from the back of her mind. That mad scramble away from Hoth, with Darth Vader's whole fleet breathing down their necks, and a hyperdrive that turned out to be broken.
Han threw her a sideways look.
Don't worry, sweetheart. The hyperdrive's working fine today.
Let's hope so, Leia murmured.
See, as long as they're chasing us, they can't bother Filva, Han went on. And the farther we draw them away, the longer the backup force'll have to get here from Ord Padron.
The brilliant green flash of a near miss cut off Leia's intended response.
I think we've given them all the time we can, she told Han.
Within her, she could sense the turmoil coming from her unborn twins.
Can we please get out of here?
A second bolt spattered off the Falcon's upper deflector shield.
Yeah, I think you're right, Han agreed. Wedge, you ready to leave this party?
Whenever you are, Falcon, Wedge said. Go ahead. We'll follow when you're clear.
Right. Reaching over, Han gripped the hyperdrive levers and pulled them gently back. Through the cockpit canopy, the stars stretched themselves into starlines, and they were safe. Leia took a deep breath, let it out slowly. Within her, she could still sense the twins' anxiety, and for a moment she turned her mind to the job of calming them down. It was a strange sensation, she'd often thought, touching minds that dealt in emotion and pure sensation instead of pictures and words. So different from the minds of Han and Luke and her other friends. So different, too, from the distant mind that had been orchestrating that Imperial attack force. Behind her, the door slid open, and Chewbacca came into the cockpit.
Good shooting, Chewie, Han told the Wookiee, as he heaved his massive bulk into the portside passenger seat beside 3PO.
You have any more trouble with the horizontal control arm?
Chewbacca rumbled a negative. His dark eyes studying Leia's face, he growled her a question.
I'm all right,
Leia assured him, blinking back sudden and inexplicable tears.
Really?
She looked at Han to find him frowning at her, too.
You weren't worried, were you? He asked. It was just an Imperial task force, nothing to get excited about.
She shook her head.
It wasn't that, Han. There was something else back there, a kind of...
She shook her head again.
I don't know.
Perhaps it was similar to your indisposition at Endor, 3PO offered helpfully.
You remember, when you collapsed while Chewbacca and I were repairing the...
Chewbacca rumbled a warning, and the droid abruptly shut up. But far too late.
No, let him talk, Han said, his sense going all protectively suspicious as he looked at Leia. What indisposition was this?
There wasn't anything to it, Han,
Leia assured him, reaching over to take his hand.
On our first orbit around Endor, we passed through the spot where the Death Star blew up. For a few seconds, I could feel something like the Emperor's presence around me. That's all.
Oh, that's all, Han said sarcastically, throwing a brief glare back at Chewbacca.
A dead Emperor tries to make a grab for you, and you don't think it's worth mentioning.
Now you're being silly, Leia chided. There was nothing to worry about. It was over quickly, and there weren't any after effects.
Really?
Anyway, what I felt back at Filva was completely different.
Glad to hear it, Han said, not yet ready to let it go. Did you have any of the med people check you over or anything after you got back?
Well, there really wasn't any time before...
Fine. You do it as soon as we're back.
Leia nodded with a quiet sigh. She knew that tone, and it wasn't something she could wholeheartedly argue against anyway.
All right, if I can find time.
You'll make time, Han countered. Or I'll have Luke lock you in the med center when he gets back.
I mean it, sweetheart.
Leia squeezed his hand, feeling a similar squeeze on her heart as she did so. Luke, off alone in Imperial territory. But he was all right. He had to be.
All right, she told Han. I'll get checked out. I promise.
Good, he said, his eyes searching her face. So what was it you felt back at Filva?
I don't know.
She hesitated. Maybe it was the same thing Luke felt on the Katana. You know, when the Imperials put that landing party of clones aboard.
Yeah, Han agreed doubtfully. Maybe. Those dreadnoughts were awfully far away.
There were probably a lot more clones, though, too.
Yeah, maybe, Han said again.
Well, I suppose Chewie and me'd better get to work on that ion flux stabilizer before it quits on us completely. Can you handle things up here okay, sweetheart?
I'm fine, Leia assured him, just as glad to be leaving this line of conversation. You two go ahead.
Because the other possibility was one she'd just as soon not think about right now. The Emperor, it had long been rumored, had had the ability to use the Force to exercise direct control over his military forces. If the Jedi Master Luke had confronted on Jomark had that same ability. Reaching down, she caressed her belly and focused on the pair of tiny minds within her. No, it was indeed not something she wanted to think about.
I presume, Thrawn said in that deadly calm voice of his, that you have some sort of explanation.
Slowly, deliberately, Kabauth lifted his head from the command room's double display circle to look at the Grand Admiral. At the Grand Admiral. And, with undisguised contempt, at the Isalimir on its nutrient frame slung across Thrawn's shoulders.
Do you likewise have an explanation, Grand Admiral Thrawn? He demanded.
You broke off the diversionary attack on Filva, Thrawn said, ignoring Cabal's question. You then proceeded to send the entire task force on a dead-end chase.
And you, Grand Admiral Thrawn, have failed to bring my Jedi to me, Cabal countered.
His voice, Pelion noticed uneasily, was slowly rising in both pitch and volume.
You, your tame Nogri, your entire empire, all of you have failed.
Thrawn's glowing red eyes narrowed.
Indeed. And was it also our failure that you were unable to hold on to Luke Skywalker after we delivered him to you on Jomark?
You did not deliver him to me, Grand Admiral Thrawn,
Cabalth insisted.
I summoned him there through the Force.
It was Imperial Intelligence who planted the rumor that Joris Cabalth had returned and been seen on Jomark, Thrawn cut him off coldly. It was Imperial Transport who brought you there, Imperial Supply who arranged and provisioned that house for you, and Imperial Engineering who built the camouflaged island landing site for your use. The Empire did its part to get Skywalker into your hands. It was you who failed to keep him there.
No, Cabal snapped. Skywalker left Jomark because Mara Jade escaped from you and twisted his mind against me. And she will pay for that. You hear me? She shall pay.
For a long moment, Thrawn was silent.
You threw the entire Filva task force against the Millennium Falcon, he said at last, his voice under control again. Did you succeed in capturing Leia Organa Solo?
No, Cabal growled. But not because she didn't want to come to me. She does, just as Skywalker does.
Thrawn threw a glance at Pelion. She wants to come to you? He asked.
Cabal smiled. Very much, he said, his voice unexpectedly losing all its anger, becoming almost dreamy. She wants me to teach her children, he continued, his eyes drifting around the command room. To instruct them in the ways of the Jedi. To create them in my own image, because I am the master, the only one there is.
He looked back at Thrawn.
You must bring her to me, Grand Admiral Thrawn, he said.
His manner somewhere halfway between solemn and pleading.
We must free her from her entrapment among those who fear her powers. They'll destroy her if we don't.
Of course we must, Thrawn said soothingly. But you must leave that task to me. All I need is a little more time. Cabal frowned with thought, his hand slipping up beneath his beard to finger the medallion hanging on its neck chain, and Pelion felt a shiver run up his back. No matter how many times he saw it happen, he would never get used to these sudden dips into the slippery twilight of clone madness. It had, he knew, been a universal problem with the early cloning experiments, a permanent mental and emotional instability, inversely scaled to the length of the duplicate's growth cycle. Few of the scientific papers on the subject had survived the Clone Wars era. But Pelion had come across one that had suggested that no clone grown to maturity in less than a year would be stable enough to survive outside of a totally controlled environment. Given the destruction they'd unleashed on the galaxy, Pelion had always assumed that the Clone Masters had eventually found at least a partial solution to the problem. Whether they had recognized the underlying cause of the madness was another question entirely. It could very well be that Thrawn was the first to truly understand it.
Very well, Grand Admiral Thrawn, Cabal said abruptly. You may have one final chance, but I warn you, it will be your last. After that, I will take the matter into my own hands.
Beneath the bushy eyebrows, his eyes flashed.
And I warn you further, if you cannot accomplish even so small a task, perhaps I will deem you unworthy to lead the military forces of my empire.
Thrawn's eyes glittered, but he merely inclined his head slightly.
I accept your challenge, Master Cabauth.
Good.
Deliberately, Cabauth resettled himself into his seat and closed his eyes.
You may leave me now, Grand Admiral Thrawn. I wish to meditate and to plan for the future of my Jedi.
For a moment, Thrawn stood silently, his glowing red eyes gazing unblinkingly at Cabauth. Then he shifted his gaze to Pelion.
You'll accompany me to the bridge, Captain, he said. I want you to oversee the defense arrangements for the Ukiyo system.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, glad of any excuse to get away from Cabauth.
For a moment he paused, feeling a frown cross his face as he looked down at Cabauth. Had there been something he had wanted to bring to Thrawn's attention? He was almost certain there was. Something having to do with Cabauth and clones and the Mount Tantus project. But the thought wouldn't come, and with a mental shrug, he pushed the question aside.
it would surely come to him in time. Stepping around the display ring, he followed his commander from the room. Chapter 2. It was called the Kalias Sajlilu, the city of glowing crystal of Birchest, and it had been one of the most spectacular wonders of the galaxy since the earliest days of the Old Republic. The entire city was nothing more or less than a single gigantic crystal, created over the eons by saltile spray from the dark red-orange waters of the Lifari Sea that roiled up against the low bluff upon which it rested. The original city had been painstakingly sculpted from the crystal over decades by local Birchestian artisans, whose descendants continued to guide and nurture its slow growth. At the height of the Old Republic, Kalias had been a major tourist attraction, its populace making a comfortable living from the millions of beings who flocked to the stunning beauty of the city and its surroundings. But the chaos of the Clone Wars and the subsequent rise of the Empire had taken a severe toll on such idle amusements, and Kalias had been forced to turn to other means for its support. Fortunately, the tourist trade had left a legacy of well-established trade routes between Birchest and most of the galaxy's major systems. The obvious solution was for the Birchestians to promote Kalias as a trade center, and while the city was hardly to the level yet of Sviverin or Kataris, they had achieved a modest degree of success. The only problem was that it was a trade center on the Imperial side of the line. A squad of stormtroopers strode down the crowded street, their white armor taking on a colored tinge from the angular red-orange buildings around them. Taking a long step out of their way, Luke Skywalker pulled his hood a bit closer around his face. He could sense no particular alertness from the squad, but this deep into Imperial space there was no reason to take chances. The stormtroopers strode past without so much as a glance in his direction, and with a quiet sigh of relief, Luke returned his attention to his contemplation of the city. Between the stormtroopers, the Imperial fleet crewers on layover between flights, and the smugglers poking around hoping to pick up jobs, the darkly businesslike sense of the city was in strange and pointed contrast to its serene beauty. And somewhere in all that serene beauty was something far more dangerous than mere Imperial stormtroopers. A group of clones. Or so New Republic intelligence thought. Painstakingly sifting through thousands of intercepted Imperial communiques, they'd tentatively pinpointed Kalias and the Birchest system as one of the transfer points in the new flood of human duplicates beginning to man the ships and troop carriers of Grand Admiral Thrawn's war machine. That flood had to be stopped, and quickly, which meant finding the location of the cloning tanks and destroying them, which first meant backtracking the traffic pattern from a known transfer point, which first meant confirming that clones were indeed coming through Kalias. A group of men dressed in the dull bands and robes of Sviverini traders came around a corner two blocks ahead, and as he had so many times in the past 2 days, Luke reached out toward them with the Force. One quick check was all it took. The traders did not have the strange aura he'd detected in the boarding party of clones that had attacked them aboard the Katana. But even as he withdrew his consciousness, something else caught Luke's attention, something he had almost missed amid the torrent of human and alien thoughts and sensations that swirled together around him like bits of colored glass in a sandstorm. A coolly calculating mind, one which Luke felt certain he'd encountered before, but couldn't quite identify through the haze of mental noise between them. And the owner of that mind was, in turn, fully aware of Luke's presence in Kalias, and was watching him. Luke grimaced. Alone in enemy territory, with his transport 2 kilometers away at the Kalias landing field, and his only weapon,
a lightsaber that would identify him the minute he drew it from his tunic, he was not exactly holding the high ground here. But he had the Force, and he knew his follower was there. All in all, it gave him fair odds. A couple of meters to his left was the entrance to the long arch tunnel of a pedestrian bridgeway. Turning down it, Luke stepped up his pace. Trying to remember from his study of the city maps exactly where this particular bridge went. Across the city's icy river, he decided, and up toward the taller and higher class regions overlooking the sea itself. Behind him, he sensed his pursuer follow him into the bridgeway. And as Luke put distance between himself and the mental din of the crowded market regions behind him, he was finally able to identify the man. It was not as bad as he'd feared, but potentially at least it was bad enough. With a sigh, Luke stopped and waited. The bridgeway, with its gentle curve hiding both ends from view, was as good a place as any for a confrontation. His pursuer came to the last part of the curve. Then, as if anticipating that his quarry would be waiting there, he stopped just out of sight. Luke extended his senses, caught the sound of a blaster being drawn. "It's all right," he called softly. "We're alone. Come on out." There was a brief hesitation, and Luke caught the momentary flicker of surprise. And then Talon Karda stepped into sight. "I see the universe hasn't run out of ways to surprise me," the smuggler commented, inclining his head to Luke in an abbreviated bow as he slid his blaster back into its holster. "From the way you were acting, I thought you were probably a spy from the New Republic, but I have to admit you're the last person I would have expected them to send." Luke eyed him, trying hard to read the sense of the man. The last time he'd seen Karda, just after the battle for the Katana, the other had emphasized that he and his smuggling group intended to remain neutral in this war. "And what were you going to do after you knew for sure?" "I hadn't planned on turning you in, if that's what you mean," Karda said, throwing a glance behind him down the bridgeway. "If it's all the same to you, I'd like to move on. Burchestians don't normally hold extended conversations in bridgeways, and the tunnel can carry voices a surprising distance." "And if there were an ambush waiting for them at the other end of the bridgeway?" "But if there were, Luke would know before they reached it." "Fine with me," he said, stepping to the side and gesturing Karda forward. The other favored him with a sardonic smile. "You don't trust me, do you?" he said, brushing past Luke and heading down the bridgeway. "Must be Han's influence," Luke said apologetically, falling into step beside him. "His, or yours, or maybe Mara's." He caught the shift in Karda's sense, a quick flash of concern that was as quickly buried again. "Speaking of Mara, how is she?" "Nearly recovered," Luke assured him. "The medics tell me that repairing that kind of light neural damage isn't difficult, just time-consuming." Karda nodded, his eyes on the tunnel ahead. "I appreciate you taking care of her," he said, almost grudgingly. "Our own medical facilities wouldn't have been up to the task." Luke waved the thanks away. "It was the least we could do after the help you gave us at the Katana." "Perhaps." They reached the end of the bridgeway and stepped out into a street considerably less crowded than the one they'd left. Above and ahead of them, the three intricately carved government headquarter towers that faced the sea could be seen above the nearby buildings. Reaching out with the Force, Luke did a quick reading of the people passing by. Nothing. "You heading anywhere in particular?" he asked Karda. The other shook his head. "Wandering the city," he said casually. "You?" "The same," Luke said,
trying to match the other's tone. And hoping to see a familiar face or two, or three, or four, or five. So Carda knew, or had guessed, why he was here. Somehow that didn't really surprise him. "If they're here to be seen, I'll find them," he said. "I don't suppose you have any information I could use." "I might," Carda said. "Do you have enough money to pay for it?"
"Knowing your prices, probably not," Luke said. "But I could set you up a credit line when I get back."
"If you get back," Carda countered. "Considering how many Imperial troops there are between you and safe territory, you're not what I would call a good investment risk at the moment." Luke cocked an eyebrow at him. "As opposed to a smuggler at the top of the Empire's locate and detain list?" he asked pointedly. Carda smiled. "As it happens, Kallias is one of the few places in Imperial space where I'm perfectly safe. The Berchestian governor and I have known each other for several years. More to the point, there are certain items important to him which only I can supply."
"Military items?"
"I'm not part of your war, Skywalker," Carda reminded him coolly. "I'm neutral, and I intend to stay that way. I thought I'd made that clear to you and your sister when we last parted company."
"Oh, it was clear enough," Luke agreed. "I just thought that events of the past month might have changed your mind."
Carda's expression didn't change, but Luke could detect the almost unwilling shift in his sense. "I don't particularly like the idea of Grand Admiral Thrawn having access to a cloning facility," he conceded. "It has the long-term potential for shifting the balance of power in his favor, and that's something neither of us wants to see happen. But I think your side is rather overreacting to the situation."
"I don't know how you can call it overreacting," Luke said. "The Empire has most of the 200 dreadnoughts of the Katana fleet, and now they've got an unlimited supply of clones to crew them with."
"Unlimited is hardly the word I would use," Carda said. "Clones can only be grown so quickly if you want them mentally stable enough to trust with your warships. 1 year minimum per clone, as I recall the old rule of thumb."
A group of five Vaithkree passed by in front of them along a cross street. So far, the Empire had been only cloning humans, but Luke checked them out anyway. Again, nothing.
"A year per clone, you say?"
"At the absolute minimum," Carda said.
"The pre-Clone Wars documents I've seen suggest 3 to 5 years would be a more appropriate period. Quicker than the standard human growth cycle, certainly, but hardly any reason for panic."
Luke looked up at the carved towers, their sunlit red-orange in sharp contrast to the billowing white clouds rolling in from the sea behind them. "What would you say if I told you the clones who attacked us on the Katana were grown in less than a year?"
Carda shrugged. "That depends on how much less."
"The full cycle was 15 to 20 days.
Carda stopped short. "What?" he demanded, turning to stare at Luke.
15 to 20 days, Luke repeated, stopping beside him. For a long moment, Carda locked eyes with him. Then, slowly, he turned away and began walking again.
"That's impossible," he said. "There must be an error."
"I can get you a copy of the studies."
Carda nodded thoughtfully, his eyes focused on nothing in particular. "At least that explains Ukiyo."
"Ukiyo?" Luke frowned.
Carda glanced at him. "That's right. You've probably been out of touch for a while. 2 days ago, the Imperials launched a multiple attack on targets in the Abrion and Dufilvian sectors.
They severely damaged the military base at Ord Padron and captured the Ukiyo system. Luke felt a hollow sensation in his stomach. Ukiyo was one of the top five producers of foodstuffs in the entire New Republic. The repercussions for Ebrion sector alone. How badly was Ukiyo damaged?
Apparently not at all, Carda said. My sources tell me it was taken with its shields and ground space weaponry intact.
The hollow feeling got a little bigger. I thought that was impossible to do.
A knack for doing the impossible was one of the things Grand Admirals were selected for, Carda said dryly. Details of the attack are still sketchy. It'll be interesting to see how he pulled it off.
So Thrawn had the Katana dreadnoughts, and he had clones to man them with. And now he had the ability to provide food for those clones. This isn't just the setup to another series of raids, Luke said slowly. The Empire is getting ready to launch a major offensive.
It does begin to look that way, Carda agreed. Offhand, I'd say you have your work cut out for you.
Luke studied him. Carda's voice and face were as calm as ever, but the sense behind them wasn't nearly so certain anymore. And none of this changes your mind? He prompted the other.
I'm not joining the New Republic, Skywalker, Carda said, shaking his head. For many reasons. Not the least being that I don't entirely trust certain elements in your government.
I think Felia has been pretty well discredited.
I wasn't referring only to Felia, Carda cut him off. You know as well as I do how fond the Mon Calamari have always been of smugglers. Now that Admiral Akbar has been reinstated to his council and supreme commander positions, all of us in the trade are going to have to start watching over our shoulders again.
Oh, come on, Luke snorted. You don't think Akbar is going to have time to worry about smugglers, do you?
Carda smiled wryly. Not really, but I'm not willing to risk my life on it either.
Stalemate. All right, then, Luke said. Let's put it on a strictly business level. We need to know the Empire's movements and intentions, which is something you probably keep track of anyway. Can we buy that information from you?
Carda considered. That might be possible, he said cautiously. But only if I have the final say on what I pass on to you. I won't have you turning my group into an unofficial arm of New Republic intelligence.
Agreed, Luke said. It was less than he might have hoped for, but it was better than nothing. I'll set up a credit line for you as soon as I get back.
Perhaps we should start with a straight information trade, Carda said, looking around at the crystalline buildings. Tell me what started your people looking at Calais.
I'll do better than that, Luke said. The distant touch on his mind was faint but unmistakable. How about if I confirm the clones are here?
Where? Carda asked sharply.
Somewhere that way, Luke said, pointing ahead and slightly to the right. Half a kilometer away, maybe. It's hard to tell.
Inside one of the towers, Carda decided. Nice and secure and well hidden from prying eyes. I wonder if there's any way to get inside for a look.
Wait a minute. They're moving, Luke said, frowning as he tried to hang on to the contact. Heading almost toward us, but not quite.
Probably being taken to the landing field, Carda said. He glanced around, pointed to their right. They'll probably use Mavril Street, 2 blocks that direction.
Balancing speed with the need to remain inconspicuous, they covered the distance in 3 minutes.
They'll probably use a cargo carrier or light transport, Carda said,
as they found a spot where they could watch the street without being run over by the pedestrian traffic along the edges of the vehicleway. Anything obviously military would attract attention. Luke nodded. Mavril, he remembered from the maps, was one of the handful of streets in Calais that had been carved large enough for vehicles to use, with the result that the traffic was running pretty much fore to aft. I wish I had some macro binoculars with me, he commented. Trust me, you're conspicuous enough as it is, Carter countered, as he craned his neck over the passing crowds. Any sign of them? They're definitely coming this way, Luke told him. He reached out with the force, trying to sort out the clone sense from the sandstorm of other thoughts and minds surrounding him. I'd guess 20 to 30 of them. A cargo carrier, then, Carter decided. There's one coming now, just behind that Trast speeder truck. I see it. Luke took a deep breath, calling on every bit of his Jedi skill. That's them, he murmured, a shiver running up his back. All right, Carter said, his voice grim. Watch closely. They might have left one or more of the ventilation panels open. The cargo carrier made its way toward them on its repulsor lifts, coming abruptly to a halt a short block away as the driver of the speeder truck in front of it suddenly woke up to the fact that he'd reached his turn. Gingerly, the truck eased around the corner, blocking the whole traffic flow behind it. Wait here, Carter said, and dived into the stream of pedestrians heading that direction. Luke kept his eyes sweeping the area, alert for any sense that he or Carter had been seen and recognized. If this whole setup was some kind of elaborate trap for off-world spies, now would be the obvious time to spring it. The truck finally finished its turn, and the cargo carrier lumbered on. It passed Luke and continued down the street, disappearing within a few seconds around one of the red-orange buildings. Stepping back into the side street behind him, Luke waited. And a minute later, Carter had returned. Two of the vents were open, but I couldn't see enough to be sure, he told Luke, breathing heavily. You? Luke shook his head. I couldn't see anything either, but it was them. I'm sure of it. For a moment, Carter studied his face. Then he gave a curt nod. All right, what now? I'm going to see if I can get my ship off-planet ahead of them, Luke said. If I can track their hyperspace vector, maybe we can figure out where they go from here. He lifted his eyebrows. Though two ships working together could do a better track. Carter smiled slightly. You'll forgive me if I decline the offer, he said. Flying in tandem with a New Republic agent is not exactly what I would call maintaining neutrality. He glanced over Luke's shoulder at the street behind him. This book is continued on cassette number 2, side 1.